This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good afternoon, everybody. Can everybody hear me okay? How about in the Jikoji Zendo, can you guys hear me?
Yes, good.
Wonderful. Well, it's another beautiful day, and I'd just like to express my gratitude. I've taken to acknowledging the Native people who inhabited the land I live on before I give a talk, just to, not that it rectifies any injustice, but I like to acknowledge that they tended the land for 10,000 years at least, and I occupy it now, and I just want us to all think about taking care of the land in a responsible manner. So for that reason, I like to acknowledge the Tamian people who lived in San Jose, California. And I'd also like to acknowledge the Atchistaca people who lived up where Jikoji is and where the land is still very much like it was when they lived there. So I'm grateful for that. Today, as Doug mentioned, it's the second day of the Denkoe Session. That's a joint session with Jikoji and Crooked River Zen Center, and also I think maybe Mado's group Oan is also participating, and then people who are in our wider Sangha who are participating as their schedule allows. And I welcome you. Our topic is, if you missed our talk yesterday, it was the guiding teacher of Jikoji, Shoho Michael Newhall, gave an introduction to Dogen's Genjo Koan. And that's the subject for this session. And I will pick up where Mike left off at the point of to study the Buddha way is to study the self. But before I do that, I think what I'll do, I think it'd be helpful for me to just read that up to that point, because it is all one body. As Mike put it, it's kind of a prose poem to enlightenment. And the way Dogen writes is very unique. And of course it's in Japanese, but he used language in a unique way, unique to himself. In fact, one of the people who does a lot of work translating and studying Dogen for us English speakers is Reverend Shohaku Okumura, and he's referred to Dogen's language as Dogenese, his own language. And it's very poetic. And so so when you read the Genjo Koan or any of the Shobo Genzo, I recommend that you soak it in like poetry and not really try to rationalize it or figure it out. Like, what does that mean? Of course, it's a teaching device too. So we have to work to understand it. But a lot of it, I think, is understanding through different parts of our body. And so listening to it as a work of art or a work of poetry, I think helps, helps me in any way absorb it. And so let me just read a little. So starts when all, oh, and we have several different translations of it, and I've chosen one by Kaz Ta-Nehisi and Shohaku Okumura. It's a little different than the one in the Jikochi chant book, because I think it's a little simpler language-wise. So this is the one I'm gonna read. As all things are Buddha Dharma, there is delusion and realization, practice, birth and death, and there are Buddhas and sentient beings. As the myriad things are without an abiding self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddha, no sentient being, no birth and death. The Buddha way is, basically, leaping clear of the many and the one. Thus there are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas. Yet in attachment blossoms fall, and in aversion weeds spread. To carry yourself forward and experience myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth and experience themselves is awakening. Those who have great realization of delusion are Buddhas. Those who are greatly deluded about realization are sentient beings. Further, there are those who continue realizing beyond realization. Who are in delusion, and there are those who are in delusion throughout delusion. When Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they do not necessarily notice that they are Buddhas. However, they are actualized Buddhas who go on actualizing Buddhas. When you see forms or hear sounds fully engaging body and mind, you grasp things directly. Unlike things and their reflections in the mirror, and unlike the moon and its reflection in the water, when one side is illuminated, the other side is dark. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. No trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. So that's as far as we're going to get today. And so just to review some stuff that Michael talked about yesterday, I wanted to bring up the meaning of this fascicle itself, Genjo Koan. So again, it's written in Dogenese. So it doesn't really have any meaning in the Japanese language, or even apart from this title of this fascicle, or this special meaning that Dogen wanted to convey. So I'm going to share the screen. I'm just going to show you the kanji. Of appearing. It's used in Japanese as the verb awarareru, to show up, to appear. So it has this meaning of something that exists, that comes into our awareness, just like the moon coming out from behind a cloud, or even something that you might not have seen for a long time that's been in your presence, and somebody walks in to your house and says, oh, did you notice you have that a little, you have a bold jumping spider's nest in the corner of your porch, something like that, and you see it and it appears. Here, let me show the screen. So that's this character, Gen, and this character, Joe, means becoming or incorporating. So appearing and incorporating or becoming. And then this ko is means public. So like a park in Japanese would be koen, so which means a public garden. I like to use that word koen because it's because I'm a retired park ranger, and so it's very important to me that parks be public, that they have access for everyone who has the need to go to them. So that's the sense of this ko. It's like accessible. So it's taught. It's also described in this Genjo koan meaning as so. A lot of people are familiar with the word koan, meaning a koan that you need, a Zen riddle or a Zen case, you know, that talks about something that that you're supposed to realize with your Buddha mind rather than with your rational mind. So that means like a public case. And so this ko is like a public record, excuse me, and or case, yeah. And so this public means it went from the private offices of government to being put out for everyone to see. So in that sense, it means evenness or accessibility or even like resolving justice or resolving injustice and making things just. And then the previous on for a koan public case, this one's a different on, and it means holding or pressing on something. But I think Shohaku Okamura kind of uses it as it has an older meaning, as people or things holding their proper station or place. So you have this, these are paired words, and they kind of have a sort of opposite tension between them. You have appearing and becoming, and you have public and accessible, and then you have holding your own place. But when you look at them in the sense of Dogen's intention, which in my reading, I'm going to stop this screen share now. So let me see. In the reading of that, it's there's lots of commentaries on Dogen's writings over the years, but the ones that we know are through his kind of main scholars. We have Suzuki Roshi's work and Nishiyari's work and Okamura's work that comes through Uchiyama and Sawaki Kodo. So Uchiyama Roshi said that studied Sesso, who was a disciple of Dogen's and wrote commentary. And Sesso's feeling was that Dogen's language, the Dogenese, is that all through the Shobogenzo, or the Treasury of the True Dharma Eye, which is the collection of a lot of these essays or fascicles that Dogen wrote, including the Genjo Koan, that his words are meant to transcend dichotomies. So they're meant to represent Buddha Dharma, not actual things, not absolutely descriptive, but descriptive of something that encompasses everything. So, for example, you know, we we see things relative to each other. And if we have a word, a descriptive word like big, we think, okay, and that has an opposite of small. And we know what big is and we know what small is. But if you think about those, that dichotomy, it's all relative. So if you are an ant, then I would just be a huge thing. And for me, an ant's a tiny thing. And you can go infinitely with that kind of like relativity for what is big and what is small. It's infinite. So that's the sense of the words actually being the Buddha Dharma, is you understand there's like this conflict there where they actually encompass everything. So let's say happy, and the opposite of that would be sad. And within my own experience, I have very happy experiences and I have sad ones, but there are people who've suffered much more greatly than I have. And I'm sure that my sad experiences would actually be happy ones for them. And it's when you look at actual personal experience, the variety that you have, again, is infinite. I was just reading an article about Jewel, who you might know, a singer-songwriter from the 90s, who started practicing mindfulness at an early age, and she's done a lot for the mindfulness movement. She's just this amazing person who had extremely difficult life as a child and growing, you know, up into her 20s. So you think, but, and yet she's this extremely resilient, positive person who's overcome just this tremendous hardship. So that kind of, you know, like, what would she think is, what would be really sad for her? You know, like, what would be happy for her? Like, very different. And I'm sure we can imagine people all over the world who have these very different relative ideas of what those dichotomies are. So then, you know, you think, okay, so these words can't really even be considered, you can't really think of them even as multiplicities, because if they're meant to encompass the whole Buddha Dharma, then they're not, you can't even look at probabilities, say like a hydrogen atom, and you've got these infinite probabilities around where that electron is going to be. And then like in your mind, you nail it, it's right there. But then you lose another part of the equation when you locate it, you lose its velocity. So it's kind of, I think, like that. They go beyond understanding. So we'll look at Genjo Koan that way. It's like, what's appearing and you're becoming it, and what is equal and accessible, and yet what is individual to you or in your own place and your own function. These are all kind of, they work very well with Dogen's Zenki, which is universal functioning, which again, it's like, these are really like, they're terms of Buddha Dharma that we can't really, we can kind of try to understand them. And the reason we practice is to deepen our understanding of what he's talking about. And so that's like how we become Buddhas, right? I suppose one can think. So let's see. I wanted to say that there's a very common translation. It's the one you're most likely to hear for Genjo Koan. If somebody's not using the word Genjo Kōan, they're going to say something, describe it in English, they will say actualizing the fundamental point. And because of what I just described to you all, I find this, you know, this translation troubling, because what is the point? And I don't mean that as like, you know, like what's the point, but I mean, if you can't define we all kind of want to grab that because it's a point, you know, we can understand, oh yeah, there's a point. And it really relates very strongly to our sense of self, because we often think of ourselves as being kind of a point. We have a point of view, and we're, you know, we have this point location, and it seems very easy to grasp this point concept, but it doesn't exist at all in the definition of Genjo Kōan as the characters appear. And I'd like to just share with you Uchiyama's translation of Genjo Kōan, which I think fits better. He calls it the ordinary profundity of the present moment becoming the present moment. And that really expresses the everything of the Buddha Dharma just becoming moment after moment. So I'm going to lead in to where Michael left off now, which is with the section, I guess you call it. This is the kind of the famous section of the Genjo Kōan. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the body and minds of others, drop away. No trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. So I think this is a really beautiful passage, and it's one that I've committed to memory and over the years, and have actually fallen upon when I've just been sitting and just feeling completely lost. Like, oh my God, how do I do this practice? And I think of these words, and it's just, there's just a simple natural progression to them that feels very settling to me. And in a way, it's like the early Buddha's words in the Dhammapada, you know, it's like, if A, then B. It's like kind of a natural progression that that is accessible, as opposed to the constant this and these opposites things that you keep getting in Dogen, you know, like there's emptiness and there's all dharmas, and you know, your head starts to spin after a while. So this is like a very important piece for me of this piece of the Genjo Kōan. So let's just take it apart a little bit. So to study the Buddha way is to study the self. And as I'm sure all of you know, Dogen's not talking about Buddhism here. He's not talking about studying Buddhism. He's talking about practice, our Zazen practice. So to do our Zazen practice, we study the self. And that's very, very kind of, that's the only thing we can really do is study ourselves. Because if we're studying stuff outside of ourselves, we're really involved in this subject-object kind of mind. But if we study ourselves, and that means your basic Zazen instruction, like you would get if you read Fukan Zazengi, you're settling into your body. And your body, you're getting, you're not exactly saying, to your thinking mind, shut up, because if you do, your mind just tends to get more active, but you're just like being present with everything that's happening in your body. And after a while, you notice that it's just like the stuff that occupies your brain that you think it's like, mostly it's like 99% of our worlds, what's going on in our brain, in our thoughts and our constructions about who we are. But then, you notice your body, and you notice the sensations in your body. You notice how your body is carrying on naturally, and your mind starts to quiet, and it's you realize, this brain stuff is really just a small percentage of what my body is really doing. And so if you think about, the myriad things coming forward and being enlightened, it's like naturally our bodies are doing this universal function, digesting lunch, breathing, our heart pumping, just the movement of sensations as blood's going through our capillaries, and our hair and fingernails are growing. And this is all enlightened activity just happening right inside of us. That it takes a lot of effort and determination to sit down and just listen to it and let it teach us, me. So I think that's what he's saying here. Study the self, and then as you do that, you start seeing, well, okay, I have this body here, but I'm breathing air in, like I'm breathing in wildfire smoke. So that's like, I'm breathing in, I think one of our Sangha members who's not here today, but he mentioned that he was in the thick smoke up north, and he said, I'm breathing in all these creatures that have burned. And so we realize that our bodies are constantly taking stuff in, the food we eat, the air we breathe, and excreting stuff, and our skin sloughing off. So where is this boundary that we think exists between ourselves and the so-called outside world? It's very interesting. So the sense of the boundary of what our body is can be expanded. And then I think eventually when you really can comprehend in a real physical level this codependent arising, this interdependence that we have with all life and all dharmas, then that sense, the myriad dharmas are coming forth. So let me say this. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. So I kind of jumped when I started talking about the myriad dharmas, but when you actually become absorbed in jhana, which is the word Zen comes from jhana, which is the Sanskrit word for absorption. So that absorption is the forgetting of the self, I think. I could be wrong, but and then when you get that absorption, then the myriad things actually become part of you, or you forget yourself, so there is no you. So to forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When actualized by myriad things, Your body and mind, as well as the body and minds of others, drop away. So this, Mike referred to this yesterday as he called it the ocean seal samadhi. And I'd like to learn more about that. I didn't really have a chance to look that up yet. But this, what in Japanese, Shinjin Datsuraku. So Shin is mind and Jin is body. Datsuraku, dropping off. It's famously the words that Dogen heard from his teacher Rujin, that Rujin said to him, your body and mind drop off. And Dogen had his enlightenment experience from that. When you do that, there is no difference, I think, between yourself and the universe or everything, or there is no self there at all to differentiate. And then no trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. So what is this no trace continuing endlessly? So people come back from their experiences of the of this body and mind dropping off, and they're themselves again. But if they cling to this I'm enlightened idea, it's considered a very bad thing. It's considered a poison, and it's called the stink of Zen. So it's one of the most important things to have a teacher correct you on when you start going around like, I'm enlightened, wow. So you have to return to this idea of no trace and going beyond this idea of self. And so I think I would like to end here and open it up for questions, because we have such a great group here. I'm sure there's a lot of comments to make and people's understanding of this section that I'd love to hear. So if you want to say something, you can like wave your hand and unmute yourself. And maybe I can ask Nico to call on people.
Mm-hmm. I see Doug has something to say.
Okay, yeah.
Doug. Yes, I just wanted to invite everybody who's joining us today to turn on their video. We're in a sacred space, a safe space, and we would appreciate it if people could share themselves with all of us. So thank you.
Hey, Kathy.
Nice to see everybody.
Sorry, I was just bowing to Doug.
Thank you, Kathy.
Do you have a question anyway, Kathy?
I'm kind of confused by the whole thing. The whole thing is sort of left brain intellectual to me, and it was yesterday especially too. And I guess I get it a little bit when you give examples, but when people are talking about the meanings of the words, it's just too abstract for me.
Yeah, I hear you. And it, Dogen's like very famous for being just really hard to get your mind around.
Right.
And I think, you know, even when you go and you sit, all you really need to do is breathe. And you don't need to worry about anything more than that. If you can just sit down and breathe, you're doing good.
And notice when you have a thought.
Exactly. Yeah, just keep bringing yourself back to your breath. And then eventually you'll start moving on to, you know, like expanding your awareness throughout your body. And then, you know, that's... I think you start to understand, you know, there's such a variety of experiences that each of our human bodies are capable of giving us. And the Buddhist teachings are like our path. They're like our way to kind of navigate through this territory of our lives. But eventually, you know, the real deal is this teaching beyond teaching. And so it's hard, but it also kind of, it's a reminder for us not to get too stuck on our idea of like, what is this Buddhist teachings?
You know, when I'm in Sesshin, then I'm very aware of my body, which is very tired and achy. But when I'm sitting at home, what I'm coming back to is this here and now. And that feels pretty good when I notice that I'm worrying about something yesterday or something tomorrow, and I just go, wait a minute, here I am. Then it's like I'm tuning into my surroundings, and that feels good.
Yeah, you know what? I think, Kathy, the more you sit in your home, the better it'll be for your home to be your zendo. Yeah, but I hope COVID will end soon enough that we can sit with each other again. Thank you.
Hi, yes, the guys at Crooked River. Go ahead.
Thanks, Connie. I just wanted to thank you for your Dharma talk. I really appreciated how you started it off by talking about just sort of feeling Dogen and being able to appreciate the poetry and the beauty of his words and his concepts. And so you kind of talked about sitting, you know, in our practice and absorbing what he's saying. And that really can't happen without our Zazen practice. And I really liked your description of how our limitations, you know, how we define ourselves versus our environment, versus the universe, and the limitations of that, and being able to, you know, observe that and see that. And then I also really liked your description of achieving or having these breakthrough experiences, but then you know, perhaps feeling a little different after something like that happens for a while, and then it fades away. And it has to, because every single moment is a new birth and a new death. So of course these experiences, you know, they can't leave a trace. Otherwise they would just be limited. So mostly I just wanted to say I appreciated how you expressed yourself in this Dharma talk. And this whole idea of sort of having an intuitive sense that comes from our reading and understanding, but also from our experience, because each one of us has to find that in our own unique way. So thank you, Connie, appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I like your explanation of the no trace
Go ahead, Anne.
Hi, thank you, Connie. I really, really got a lot out of your talk, and I wasn't sure we'd have an opportunity to give you live feedback, so early on I wrote you a chat message that said thank you for the hydrogen atom analogy. I have a bit of a science background, so I knew what you were speaking about, and I never thought of a hydrogen atom as a Dharma gate, although, you know, Dharma gates are endless, but honestly, the way you described that was, I won't forget it. It's a beautiful and kind of stunning depiction of what a fixed view can do. You know, there's the hydrogen nucleus and the electron floating around it. And I never really thought there's an infinite number of possibilities for where that can be. But, you know, if you kind of borrow from geometry and there's an infinite number of points between every point, I guess, you know, theoretically, that is true. There is an infinite number of situations that a single hydrogen atom can be in. And then the moment you try to arrest it by stopping that electron, you've lost a big part of the hydrogen ion. So to me, that also points to duality a little bit, even though it's one thing, you know, it's really myriad things too. So it was really a very powerful experience for me to hear you describe it that way. So thank you.
Well, maybe we're done. Looks like we're done, huh?
Thank you, everyone, for joining us for the talk. Now we'll return to Kinhin and Zazen. And yes, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Connie, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.